it's early to mid-September in October. We can live with that, can't we, folks? Beautiful forecast, beautiful day. Everything's going our way. Welcome to the Stan Turner Show. Nice to have you on board. Thank you for your company. If you're out and about, take us with you. We have, I know. We've got an interesting hour for you. Glad to have you with us. We've got, a familiar face here, my partner on the radio here, Monday through Friday, Mr. Tom Shubidoo. And what brings you down today besides your legs in your car, Yeah? You know, for some reason, I can't hear you. Do we have my little...
Here we go.
All right.
I'm here helping out... Helping Kyle. He's got a big construction job he's doing this weekend, so I figured I'd pop on in and give you a little harassment during the day.
Okay, thanks a lot.
That's what I'm here for.
Something is still sounding weird for me here. Maybe, have you got everything punched up there okay?
Everything's on.
Okay, it must be me, my friend. Well, we want to get to it here. We've got a lot to cover today, and it's going to be fun. You know what? You've heard the old saying, they don't make them like they used to. You can apply that to many things that don't seem to have the quality, the craftsmanship that we used to see, right? Well, take houses. Lots of nice modern ones out there, no doubt about that. Some of those more recent built houses are big, really big. Some, what do they call them? McMansions. But how do they, the big ones, stack up against the really big homes of yesteryear? Those massive and splendid Victorians and Queen Anne's and French Second Empires and Gothic revivals. In many ways, it's hard to top those oldies but goodies. We'll never see their likes built again, that's for sure. And thank goodness, many of those old gems are being lovingly preserved and maintained. Minnesota and Wisconsin have a bounty of fine old homes that are not going away anytime soon. A couple of years ago, we were treated to a fine, large format book on Wisconsin's big house treasures. Now it's Minnesota's turn. And who better to do the job than Larry Millette? Larry has made his mark as the foremost chronicler and interpreter of Minnesota architecture and the people stories that go along with them. Some pretty interesting characters built and inhabited these palaces on the prairie. No dry-as-dust books from Mr. Millette's keyboard, that's for sure. This is good stuff. Very interesting always. In just a couple of days, we'll see the rollout of Larry's new book. It's titled Minnesota's Own. It's a big book on big old extraordinary houses around Minnesota, 22 in all. And it's a joy for the senses with captivating stories, lots of illustrations, and eye-catching color photos by a guy named Matt Schmidt. A guy named Larry Millette is sitting right next to me. Welcome back to the show, Larry.
Thank you. Good to be here, as always.
Beautiful job, as always, too, on the book. We're going to dive into it. First, credit where credit is due, besides you, this photographer friend of yours. Wow, what a shooter.
Yeah,
tell us about Matt.
Yeah, Matt's, I met him for the first time working on this project, and he's been a commercial photographer who's also done architectural photography, and he was hired along with me to do this book, and did a fabulous job. He really did.
The color pops off the pages. As I said, this is a large format book, and folks, you are going to love it, love it, love it. The pictures, the stories that go with it. Larry, before we dive into it all, let's see, we got Halloween, just less than a week away. And going into these big homes to do your research, I got to ask you on behalf of people out there, did you come upon any dungeons, any secret passageways, trapdoors, hauntings, witches in the belfry, that kind of stuff?
I wish I could say yes, but no, I didn't. I'm sorry to tell you. No hauntings that anyone told us about, but I would certainly suspect that there might be a haunted house or two. Here amidst all of them.
Well, I was hoping there'd be a secret passageway, huh?
Yeah, you asked. There's nothing that. I like more than just one of those secrets.
Well, actually, I can tell you about a house down in Laverne that we did not put in the book, but we visited as part of our tour. And that house has, I guess you could call it a secret passageway. It was built by a guy who was involved in the quarrying business down there, the stone. Yeah. And you go down the basement, and there's this little door, and you walk out of this door, and you go through this passageway out into the middle of the yard where there's all underground, and there's a little kind of a couple of circular rooms there. And you know what those were for? He stored his dynamite there.
And he left?
I didn't see any, but I'm thinking, I don't know that I would store my dynamite anywhere near the house, but he had it underground. He had his own little dynamite storage room. So.
Well, Larry, like a lot of people, dynamite gets unstable the older it gets.
I know. You know what I mean. Sort of like you and me. Yeah.
Well, so I got a copy of the book the other day. It's not out yet, so I got a preview copy.
It should be.
Copy.
It should be available. Yeah, I know. It's. Okay. I've seen it online, and I would think most stores would be getting it soon, if not already.
Right. I checked some bookshelves around. Here, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. It's due any time. I was surprised, delighted, but surprised, because the pre-publication brochures on the book show a beautiful summer scene.
Right.
Against the Donaldson Mansion in Minneapolis, Lowry Hill.
Right.
And the full flush of summer, the beautiful green lawn and all the rest. And you can imagine my surprise when I opened up the envelope and saw like a scene out of Dr. Zhivago. It's the Swedish Institute, the swan turned black.
Swan turned black,
How did we have this sudden change in seasons?
Well, it was simply that the people behind the book decided that they wanted perhaps a different cover after we had shown the early one. So we made a change from one to the other. And we did like the idea of a winter scene for Minnesota, and this is actually this cover is actually almost literally a snapshot that the photographer took. Right. It wasn't one of his full bore set it all up shots, but he happened to be there on a snowy day, and it was just caught the situation. So people liked it, and that's how it ended up on the cover.
It's beautiful, very Dr. Zhivago-esque.
Yeah, you can see Lara up there in the window somewhere. On the balcony.
Start playing the song, will you? Okay. Well, we're going to get into the homes here. We're going to cover as many as the 22 as possible. We won't get to them all today, but it'll be a joyride for sure and a good one. I want to ask you about the selection process. Minnesota, like Wisconsin, has an embarrassment, a bounty of great, big, beautiful, old houses. How did you go about this, narrowing it down to 22?
I just took out a map and threw some darts at it.
That's what I thought you'd say.
No, it was a long process. I always tell people right at the start, this isn't the 22 best houses in Minnesota, because I don't know how you'd even begin to to do a list like that. It's a sampling of 22 great houses. We were looking for houses of different styles, different periods, different sizes, different locations. We wanted to get a mix of houses around the state. We wanted to get out of the Twin Cities, but also realize that the Twin Cities is very rich. So we did a lot of thinking. I started out with a list of my own that was, I think, over 1,000 houses.
Whoa, wow.
And then we narrowed it down through a series of meetings to about, 100 or so houses. We took tours around the state. I think we ended up seeing maybe 80 or so.
Wow.
And then, you make the selection, and there's lots of wonderful houses that aren't in the book that easily could have been in the book, as you can imagine. I mean, you could do 20 great St. Paul houses, 20 great Minneapolis houses, 20 great Duluth houses alone. Sure. So it was that kind of a process, trying to find a nice mix of houses.
It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah,
so much
it is.
To choose from, quality. There's no magic to the order we're going to take these in. You've broken the book down into urban mansions, Victorians, modern living, great estates. Let's just start right here in Stillwater. Why not? William Sauntry, the house, the recreation hall here in Stillwater. This story has a common thread with many others throughout your book. The guy who built this came from very modest, humble beginnings and worked his way up, and sometimes the arc of their life and career goes right up and right down. But tell us about this and the man who brought it about.
Well, the Sauntry Mansion, Sauntry was one of the lumber kings of the St. Croix Valley, and was born, I believe, in Canada, as I recall. Was it his first cousin was Bing Crosby?
Yeah, Bing
Crosby. Mm-hmm. Right. Ended up coming out here as the lumber resources were being developed, and got to work for, eventually did a lot of work for with Weyerhaeuser, but had his own company for a time. Made a lot of money. The fortunes of the lumber people in Stillwater were pretty astounding. It was just a huge industry, and he made, I think he was worth at least $2 million at one time, which was much more in today's money. So he built a house and expanded it over the years, as many people did. And then, of course, he built the incredible recreation hall behind it.
That's what they call it.
Yeah, which is the great surviving example in Minnesota of Moorish revival architecture.
Looks like right out of Alhambra, Spain.
And as I mentioned in the book, there was another one of those in Minneapolis that's gone in the attic of a house. I call that the Alhambra in the attic. This is the Alhambra in Stillwater. And and just this utterly fantastic thing he created with a swimming pool, and it was just an amazing building. And then, of course, he... Not too long after it was built, he died, and in, shall we say, unhappy circumstances.
Oh, well.
Killed himself at the Ryan Hotel in St. Paul, shot himself. And there are different versions of why that happened, whether or not he was running out of money or something else was going on. We're not quite sure, but one of those kind of tragic stories. But you find, when you look at these houses, you find all sorts of different stories about the people who built them.
All of these houses, all 22, still stand. They've been lovingly, many of them lovingly refurbished and maintained today. The Santry House, it's a B&B right now, isn't
it? Yep, it's a B&B, and the rec hall, as it's called, is separately owned, different owners, and they've restored that. So it's all the houses. One of the themes of the book was restoration. So we have privately owned houses, we have institutionally owned houses that have been, you know, beautifully restored. In some cases, we have one house where the people spent 30 years working on it. So that's one of the themes of the book, is how old houses and old buildings are maintained and restored.
Yeah, that's a husband and wife down in Winona, I think.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, right? a doctor and his wife.
We might get to that. But folks, this Santry, you can go there. You can stay there.
You can stay there, yep.
Soak up the
absolutely
atmosphere. And we mentioned Alhambra. That's a Moorish-style palace in Spain, isn't it?
That is correct,
okay.
Yep.
Okay, all right. Let's do the cover boy here, Swan Turnblad. It's known as the Swedish Institute in Minneapolis, is it not? What a story here. This gets really wacky.
Yeah, he was a really interesting guy who, you know, came over as the poor Swedish immigrant and got involved in newspapering.
I was involved in newspapering
for a long time, and for many years was the owner and publisher of the largest circulation Swedish language newspaper in the United States, and that's where his money came from. And he built the mansion kind of, I think, to certainly to show off his own wealth, also to showcase Swedish culture. But there were lots of allegations at the time he built it that he had kind of drained that paper of its money to go to build his house. There were a lot of lawsuits over what he did with the money from the newspaper. It's a pretty fascinating story. And then he ended up living there really not for a great deal of time. He had one daughter and his wife, and they apparently preferred to live in their apartment downtown. And
so that, this palace,
yeah, the palace was kind of built and never really lived in to a great extent.
Was he ever prosecuted?
No, he wasn't. They were all civil suits as far as I know, and they went on and on, and they were intensely covered in the newspapers. He was a very well-known figure in Minneapolis, claimed he had the first automobile in Minneapolis. Did a lot of events. He would travel all over the world and then write about it, which today we call that junketeering.
Yeah, we do.
And he did a little bit of that, but an amazing house. I mean, an absolutely amazing house.
A little over
house.
The top, Larry.
A little
it's,
over
it's,
the
it's
top.
It's kind of King Ludwig of Bavaria, isn't it?
It has a little bit of that quality, but boy, I tell you, the woodwork in that house is just unbelievable.
Got a fireplace that two stories high.
Three-story high fireplace. Yeah.
Wow. So Svenska Amerikanska Posten.
Posten was
Swedish
the name of
newspaper.
I'm glad you brought that out.
Well, I'm half Swedish, so I thought I'd take a run at it. And he may or may not have filched money from that paper.
There was a lot of dispute about that.
All right. Well, let's go to Minneapolis. Stay in Minneapolis. The Lawrence Donaldson House. This is interesting. Donaldson, yes, of the old department store.
And
so Dayton's wasn't the only guy with a corner on the dry goods market. Here, Donaldson, in fact, got in with his brother long before Dayton's got going.
Yeah. They started in the 1890s and bought a little store in Minneapolis that had failed. How you failed, I don't know. But they in those days, the way the cities were growing. But they took it over and turned it into a big success. And that's if you look at all the great American department stores, that's kind of the history of them. A family, a group comes in and takes them over, and they kind of get associated with the family name. And that was Donaldson's. He married late in life. And after he got married, he built the mansion up on Lawrie Hill, and it's a beautiful, beautiful house. He had a lot of work done by John Bradstreet, the famed interior designer of the day in Minneapolis, who did the interior parts of the interiors of Glen Sheen and Duluth and other houses.
It bristles with thistles.
It bristles with thistles.
You should
use no, hard to say. Yeah,
it is hard to say. But the thistle. He's a Scot. He came from Scotland.
Scotland, national flower of Scotland, and apparently you could also get a haggis there if you you were really desperate.
You'd have to be sheep stomach full of oatmeal. Yeah, I'll pass on that.
It sounds appealing. I don't know. Really a beautiful house that also showcases that era. From the house was built 1907, 1908. That era was very eclectic in American architecture, and the house is a mix of styles. I mean, you couldn't just look at it and say it's that. Mm-hmm. It's got arts and crafts features. It's mm-hmm. got little Romanesque features. It's got classical features. It's really a mixed bag, but it all comes together very nicely.
After his passing, after Donaldson's passing, the place was stripped of many of its fine
unfortunately, a later owner sold off a lot of the interior.
Didn't Barbara Streisand wind up with a
Barbara
piece?
Barbara Streisand ended up with a piece, and some of it would today fetch incredible prices, but
wow.
He had a lot of Tiffany stuff in that house.
Yeah,
a lot of Tiffany stuff.
And the current owner or owners have
bought back some
bought
of
back
it and done a fabulous job of restoring and the house.
A jewel on Lowry Hill.
Yeah.
Ben. This man, we should say that Donaldson, Lawrence Donaldson, was a Catholic in a sea of Protestants over in Minneapolis at the time.
Yep, he was.
A very generous man. He wasn't intimidated being kind of an island in the middle of all this. In fact, he made a very, very magnanimous gesture to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, he basically provided the land for Basilica of St. Mary.
Wow, wow. No small gift, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? Larry Millett here, his brand new book, Minnesota's Own, 22 Really Big Old Gorgeous Houses Around Minnesota. We'll continue our journey right after this.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
Valley Bookseller invites you to Classics Book Club, Sunday, October 26th at the Tin Bins Restaurant at 2 p.m. We'll be discussing the classic Truman Capote book, In Cold Blood. Set in Kansas, this book is an accounting of the two young men who robbed and murdered a Kansas family. It was among Capote's first major novels. Join us Sunday, October 26th at 2 p.m. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people, 217 Main Street North in Stillwater.
We've been family-owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Luxurious, distinctive, serene, sculpted. That's the 2014 Buick Verano from Stillwater Motors. And now, the Buick Verano is more affordable than ever. For a limited time, you can save up to $7,000 on the Verano, or lease it for just $298 a month with a $1,500 down payment. It's the car that won't break the bank. The Verano features available heated leather seats, quiet tuning cabin technology, and premium safety technologies that include side blind zone alert and rear cross traffic alert. Even better, the Buick Verano gets up to 32 miles per gallon. Find out more about Consumer Guide's 2014 Automotive Best Buy. The 2014 Buick Verano at Stillwater Motors, located at Highway 36 and Stillwater Boulevard, right on the corner, right on the price, and online at stillwatermotors.com. Redun's family owned and operated since 1922.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
We are back, Larry Millett. Oh, my goodness, when it comes to architecture, the stories behind the homes, the buildings, whatever, nobody has an equal to Larry Millett. He, for a long time, a reporter with the St. Paul newspapers, has a... You have a foot in both in fiction and nonfiction, Larry.
I do.
Sherlock Holmes has been known to visit Minnesota
from
time
to time. He's been at least one of these houses. He might have visited Glen Sheen. He was in Duluth for a while. He was definitely at the Hill House. We know that for sure.
All right. And you have done so many fine books about buildings and so forth. Some buildings long gone, some still around. Your most recent book about lost mansions called...
Yep, Once There Were Castles.
Once There Were Castles, and it's what, 85th printing now?
Something like that.
It's very, very popular, a big seller. Lost Twin Cities, one of your first, that's for sure.
I'll be down at Channel 2 later today flog that puppy.
All right. Be nice to that puppy. We have Humane Society people listening here. Okay. Well, his latest effort, and it's a beautiful effort, Minnesota's Own, Preserving Our Grand Homes, our being Minnesota's wonderful old mansions, the big houses around the state, not just the metro area, but outstate as well. Let's go up to Duluth right now. My favorite, not that that means anything, but Glenn Sheen, the so-called Congdon Mansion, hard on the shores of Lake Superior.
Yeah, it's probably, I think it's Minnesota's great house by virtue of... The siting on the lake, the quality of the design throughout, the care that was put into that house. It's pretty amazing. Congdon was, by some accounts, some people think he might have been wealthier than James J. Hill.
Really? I've never heard that said before.
But he was certainly, some people think he was, at a minimum, probably the second richest man in Minnesota at that time. And
the time being, Larry,
Glen Sheen was built in the early 20th century, 1905, 06, in that category. And he was a very, very canny investor, very low-key personality compared to someone like Hill, who was that, you know, that great buffalo
the great,
of the prairies.
The great freight train.
Yeah.
Human
but very sophisticated, very, very able, and made himself a lot of money up on the Iron Range by investing in land up there. And then he went out west, and he basically was the guy who developed Yakima, Washington, and the fruit, the apple orchards there. He built his own canal there, and he built a huge house there, which is not as well known as Glen Sheen, but which apparently is even bigger. That he finished the year he died in 1916.
Chester Congdon and Clara, his wife, came from humble beginnings. I think one of them, maybe both of them, were the offspring of ministers.
There seems to be a lot of ministerial offspring who, having served God, are chasing after mammon.
Indeed, yeah. That's right. Let's see, this clergy stuff doesn't pay all that.
Yeah.
I think we'll go for a lumber thing for a while. As you said, he did very well. Tell us about the house, folks. I hope you've been through Glen Sheen, that is the Congdon Mansion. If you haven't, tours are available. Is it still a self-tour up there? It used to be guided tours.
Yeah, I think it's mostly guided tours.
It's where the double murders were in
1977. It's where the 1977 murders were. And, of course, Elizabeth Congdon was the last of the Congdon children, and she lived in the house until she was murdered there. And that's when... After her death, she had willed it to the University of Minnesota Duluth, and that's who operates it now. Mm-hmm. The house is designed by Clarence Johnston, who was St. Paul's great architect, did many, many mansions on Summit Avenue. It's kind of a Tudor Revival house, fairly conventional Tudor Revival design, but the level of detailing in the house, the finishing, is just amazing. And, of course, the room that everybody just goes... Gaga over there.
I know what you're going to say.
Is the breakfast room.
The green room.
Fabulous. Maybe the prettiest little room in Minnesota with the view of the lake and the beautiful tile. John Bradstreet, we mentioned with the Donaldson House, was responsible for the design, part of the design of that room as well. So just in a house that's not as overwhelming, doesn't feel as overwhelming inside as, say, the James J. Hill house does, which, you know, is just kind
of on a heavy, muscular, I'm rich kind of house.
Yeah, it's a softer, gentler house and a little more textured inside. And just a really beautiful house, beautiful grounds, set between two creeks, mm-hmm. And then kind of rolls on down to the lake. And, of course, it was a big estate. He had their own barns. He had, you know, dairy cows. Everything was thought through in that house when you... they delivered coal not to the house but to grates out in the street. And then they had a system that would... pull the coal down into the basement, so you want to have those big trucks going on the estate. Just, you know, every little detail was thought out and thought through.
The carriage house, the stables, they're bigger than a small hotel, mm-hmm. and they're on the grounds too. So it's beautifully preserved, and it takes a lot of money to keep that baby going.
It does, and just heating a house of that size in Duluth is... you know, involves the exchange of some money.
You talk about Dayton's department store comes to mind. You think Minneapolis, Dayton's, Minneapolis, start to finish. Not really. The first Dayton out of this turf, Worthington, Minnesota.
Yep, that's where he ended up, where he started in Minnesota. He was actually came out to Worthington to check on what was going on out there because friends of his who were investors in New York had some money out there, and he went out there and settled and really. Was very successful in Worthington as a banker and built what is still probably the grandest house in Worthington in the 1890s. And by that time was already investing up in Minneapolis, another one of these very canny, shrewd investors, and ended up finally moving to Minneapolis and, of course, starting the Dayton's department store in 1902 there. Mm-hmm.
Goodfellas, was that what he bought?
Goodfellas was before, yep. And he took that over. And one of those guys who probably could have run almost any kind of business. And that's what you realize. You think of, like people talk about, say, Theodore Ham in St. Paul. Well, he wasn't a brewer, really, but he was just a very astute, capable businessman. And that's how that brewery, he hired the right people to make the beer, but it was, and Dayton, I think, was the same way, a very, very astute businessman who knew how to run an operation.
Well, he starts his dry goods store, and it's right across from Donaldson's, isn't it? Downtown Minneapolis.
Yep.
And, okay, so this Dayton, first name?
George.
George, is he the grandfather of the five Dayton brothers we know, and one of whom is the father of the governor. something like that.
I think the grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah.
But a direct.
He's the guy who founded the whole. He had, he married, had children. Those children had children, and that's the Dayton. Family in the Dayton fortune.
Okay, let's get back to St. Paul. We really should do the James J. Hill Mansion. We've talked about it, and this begs the question. Some of these houses, some of these palaces, were built as kind of a metaphor to say to you, I am rich, I am important, I am strong, I cast a mighty shadow. And this certainly is an example, isn't it? The James J. Hill House, the house, we call it, right by the Cathedral of St. Paul.
Yep, the big red house. It was the biggest house in Minnesota when it was built. Still the biggest house in St. Paul, 36,000 square feet, and still just impressive by the sheer mass of it. The thing about Hill was he built everything really well. I mean, this guy, there's a reason why the Great Northern survived. It's because he built the best railroad. And he never built anything lightly, and that house is just, I mean, it'll be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be there forever. It's so well built.
How thick are the walls?
Oh, I don't know, but they're thick.
2-3?
Supposedly, he built it to withstand a direct blow from a tornado, and I have no doubt that a tornado wouldn't even,
wouldn't have the courage to go under it.
Get away from me, you tornado. I'm James J. Hill. Yeah. So, a massive house, kind of dark.
Brooding.
That's kind of the phrase. Yeah.
Like he was.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he was brooding, but he was he's interesting because among all those famous sort of 19th century capitalists, a lot of them came from fairly well-to-do families.
He didn't.
He's a farm boy out of Ontario.
He worked on the levees in St. Paul, didn't he?
Yeah,
Getting his hands dirty.
Yeah, and he had one eye. He lost an eye in an accident. Right. And just a farm boy who was just happened to be, one of those dazzlingly smart, brilliant people who was also just possessed to succeed and not the kind of guy you'd want to cross, I would say.
and the poor architects and interior decorators.
Yeah, he fired the architects.
They had hell to pay with him, didn't
they? Yeah, he fired the architects. There was a dispute over some stonework, and he pretty much said, I'm the boss here, go away. So, that's kind of the way he worked.
You say the Hill Mansion is the biggest in St. Paul. There's a bigger one in the state?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the modern era, there are houses. Okay. I believe there's some 60,000 square footers out in Delaware.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll have to go look at that.
I don't think we will.
Well, let's stay in St. Paul for a moment. The so-called Gutkind, it's a Germanic name, would have been Gutkind back in the day, but we'll call it the Benjamin and William Gutkind double house in St. Paul.
Yeah.
This is an extraordinarily beautiful and different kind of residence.
Yeah, it's in what's called that Cotswold cottage style with that wavy roof that's supposed to imitate thatch. It's actually made out of steamed wood shakes. That's the big house on the top of Grand Avenue Hill, the big wall. Many people in St. Paul are familiar with it. It's the largest double house in Minnesota. It was the first Cotswold cottage, and it was designed by the architects who, at the same time they were designing that house, We're in charge of Grand Central Station, Grand Central Terminal in New York.
New York.
And that's also a story, which I tell in the book. But, pretty amazing house, I think. The way it's designed, the way it sets up to take in the southern views at the top of the hill, it's basically a series of inline plans that the whole house is kind of faces to the south. Mm-hmm. Enormous. One side's about 10,000 square feet. The other's like 6 or 7.
One side occupied by one brother. The other.
And there was a second floor passageway. You could call it St. Paul's First Skyway over an open courtyard. And that was the only connection between the houses. And there in the middle of that passageway, there was a door, which apparently, was never opened, but it was two brothers. And
what business were they in?
They owned the Mannheimer Brothers department store in St. Paul.
Okay.
They were tied in via marriage to the Mannheimers. So there was two Jewish families who built that big department store. It was one of the big family-owned department stores. Mm-hmm. You had the Golden Rule. You had Schuterman Evans, Field Schlick. So you had all those kind of the Emporium, all those stores that were family-owned, and they owned one of the big department stores in St. Paul.
And they were building a building that we today call the Ham Building.
That's right.
I believe.
Yep, yeah. And that was going to be a new department store, and to this day I haven't quite figured out what went south with that project, but it ended up sitting vacant for a couple of years, the steel frame of the building, because they failed in their efforts for whatever reason, to get financing, I'm not sure. And then Ham took it over, and that's the Ham Building.
Well, there's dry goods in that store at ground level. Hymie's Haberdashery.
That's right.
Which is one of our fine sponsors here.
Absolutely.
And you love the building, too.
Fabulous building.
Effusively about it.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, the Ham Building. So it has the Goodkin connection there, and a beautiful house indeed. That's been on, I've been through many of these because of tours on the Ramsey and Summit.
Yeah, some of them have been on the Ramsey Hill or Summit Hill tours, absolutely.
And we recommend you take advantage of that because it's fantastic. You're a big Frank Lloyd Wright fan.
I am.
And you include one of his houses here.
Yep, it's the Nancy and Malcolm Willey house in Minneapolis. It's a seminal Wright design from 1934. It's all of about 1,300 square feet. It's the smallest house
in the
book.
Just a wee little thing. Hmm?
And when you see the photographs in the book, my wife thinks that one of those photographs is like the great photograph in the book. His house is just photographed so beautifully. And they photograph beautifully because of how he created them. This is a little three-bedroom house, mm-hmm. really two bedrooms and a study, that he built for a faculty member at the University of Minnesota and his wife. Mm-hmm. And there's a great story behind it, how she, kind of got Wright to do it and got it built on budget, which for Wright was almost unheard of.
I won't ask you how she got Wright to build it.
a lot of persuading.
We won't go there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's the house, by the way, he designed before. You ever heard that little place in the Pennsylvania woods called Falling Water?
Oh, yeah. That little place.
Yeah. This is the house before Falling Water.
Really?
Yeah.
That's iconic, to say the least. Okay. So one of your favorites in the book, no doubt about it. And you're happy that one's included?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where else would you like to go here? The Alexander Ramsey House. Let's bounce back to St. Paul, close by Irvine Park. A beautiful setting. Irvine Park itself, you have several little sidebar features throughout your book here, including Minnesota's Victorian City, which would be Stillwater. Let's go to the Alexander Ramsey House.
Well, that's, one of the things we wanted to do is get a mix of houses, and that is the great remaining example in Minnesota of the French Second Empire style. That style with the big, heavy mansard roof, very popular style in the 1860s and 1870s, and there just aren't a huge number of high-quality French Second Empire houses left. This one, because it was, of course, Ramsey was the second state governor and the first territorial governor of Minnesota, but it was owned by his family right up through the 1930s and was ultimately donated to the 1950s, and ultimately donated to the state. So the house is remarkably intact, which is hard to find, houses of that vintage. You get a sense of sort of the different way people lived then, the size of the rooms, the ceilings, the doors are enormous. I mean, I don't know how many square feet it is, but it's relatively small compared to the Hill House, but that was the great mansion of its day.
One of my favorite photos among many favorite photos in your book is Matt Schmidt's shot of the Alexander Ramsey House, where you see the beautiful metal wrought iron fence in the foreground. It comes alive. I've never seen that angle shot before. This is one of the most photographed houses
very photographed
in the Midwest.
Yeah, and that was part of Matt's challenge was to...
Oh.
to find new ways of looking. In some cases, houses that have been extensively photographed, and others that, you know, we've got other houses in there that have never really been featured in any book.
We could talk for a long time about the man, Alexander Ramsay. He had good political connections. That's what got him out here. So he was wired the right way politically, no doubt about it. There are some things about him that have a very dark side, too.
Yes.
We don't need to go into that. You do touch into it, touch it on the book here.
Yeah.
Nearby, within walking, easy walking distance, Irvine Park. Tell us about that, the near-death experience in Irvine Park.
Yeah, well, you know, that was basically had kind of devolved into sort of a slum in the 1960s, and that was true of a lot of older parts of cities at that time because of my next book is on mid-century modernism and urban renewal, and a lot of other things were happening, and people got together in the neighborhood and really rescued it, established the first heritage preservation district in St. Paul, sort of recreated the district along historic lines. I mean, it's not Irvine Park as it is today isn't the way it was 100 years ago. You've had houses that have been moved in, mm-hmm. houses that have been moved from one location to the other.
Right.
So it's kind of a recreated historic setting, but
it works.
It works, and the park itself is beautiful. And
fountain.
The fountain, and to have a spot that close to downtown with that that atmosphere is really quite nice.
I'm guessing a lot of people who visit downtown St. Paul don't have a clue that
yeah.
it's a beautiful pocket park like
yeah,
that nearby.
Just right yeah. down the hill from XL. I mean,
yeah.
it's literally within a two-block walk or one-block walk of XL, right down the hill, and all of a sudden you're in this kind of Victorian world.
You are.
And it's very cool.
It's a great urban treasure, no doubt about it. All these houses, Larry Millett's new book. If it's not in your bookshop yet, and we hope you check out Valley Bookseller here in Stillwater, it'll be there shortly.
And we'll be doing an event at the Santry Mansion, too.
We're going to mention that here toward the end, too. Larry Millett, Minnesota's own 22 big old houses around the state of Minnesota, preserving our grand homes. We'll be back in a minute. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
There are some things in life that you have to think about before you want to, before you need to, like insurance or like having a will. Here's another one to add to that list. Skilled nursing and rehab services. Let's say you or someone you love falls and breaks a hip or has a stroke or has surgery. If you're older, chances are you're going to need some extended care and help transitioning from the hospital to your home. Until now, you've given it zero thought. But seriously, where would you turn in your time of need? Kinnick Health and Rehab, conveniently located in River Falls, right next to the hospital, is a name you should know right now, before you need it. At Kinnick Health and Rehab, they specialize in post-acute rehab services. These are services that are tailored to your needs, using state-of-the-art equipment. Their exceptional therapists are compassionate and caring. They'll help you achieve your goals in a warm and inviting environment. Make sure to tell your doctor about Kinnick Health and Rehab of River Falls, serving western Wisconsin and the Twin Cities. For more information, call 715-426-6000.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
Let's continue now with Larry Millett, author of a brand new book going to roll off the press. Already has rolled off the press. It should be in your bookstore anytime now. Minnesota's own, preserving our grand homes. These are the grand old homes around Minnesota, 22 of them. A difficult winnowing process for you, Mr. Millett. Had to be difficult. You visited 80-some, got inside 80 before you made your final cut. And in southwestern Minnesota, you knocked on the door and went out.
Well, we wanted to go see this house that some people have attributed to Cass Gilbert, and I wasn't really quite sure. It's a very interesting design, so we sent a small town out there, and we go driving out in the middle of March, and it was, you know, one of those bleak March days.
March is synonymous with
bleak. Leaden sky, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and so anyway, we're out there in the middle of nowhere, and we come upon the house, and apparently the person who owns it is out in front raking. the woman. And so we kind of go up and I introduce myself and say, yeah, you know, I sent you a letter. And she said, yeah, I got it.
That's her way of saying welcome, Larry.
Well, okay. And, you know, I mentioned we're kind of doing this thing on this book, and we kind of like to look at these houses. And she said, yeah. And but we never got invited in.
Not even an offer of cookies and milk.
No. So we thought, okay, she's not interested.
Scratch.
That's fine.
I didn't make the cut.
Yep. That's her right. But,
So. Fascinating. Let's go to Red Wing. A house called Tower View.
Here. Oh, yeah.
This man, Alexander Anderson, you at one point lovingly call him, benevolently call him, a mad scientist. This, you could say, is the house that Puffed Rice built.
Yep. Basically, if you eat any kind of breakfast cereal, including Cheerios, my favorite, you're eating cereals that were essentially invented by Alexander Anderson.
That's another Lucky Charms man.
Yeah. I've had kids who are
Lucky. Anyway, Alexander Anderson. Okay.
Lucky Charms aren't cereal. They're candy. But that's
right.
another.
Okay, thank you.
That's another issue.
Split
hairs, Alexander Anderson basically invented the process for puffing cereal. And he actually literally shot it from guns.
A cereal puffer.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and, thank you. I'm
was
sorry about that.
Another very poor, one of those fabulous, strange stories. This kid literally grows up in a log cabin in the middle of nowhere. By the time he's 29 years old, he's getting his Ph.D. in Germany, in botany, and writing his Ph.D. thesis in German. Then he comes back to the United States, starts fooling around with puffing cereal, and he becomes very rich and builds this wonderful estate out in Red Wing called Tower View.
Okay, tell us about it. I drive by it all the time. I always wondered what it is. It's you're going in and coming into Red Wing from the Twin Cities.
Right.
It's off to your left, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, kind of on the
long, low brick wall.
Yeah, long brick wall, the big tower, which was the water tower. All built, the whole complex is built of poured concrete, and that has underground connections to the units. He built his house there. He built his a workplace there where he could work on his various schemes for developing and improving cereal and other things. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who may have been the first serious student of tornadoes in Minnesota.
Really? My goodness.
And it's now his grandson, Robert Hedin, is now in charge of what's called the Anderson Center for Interdisciplinary Studies there, which brings in lots of artists and writers. Mm. So it's a fascinating place. Been in the family all along, and one of the great estates, and like no other because of the fact that he also was conducting his own businesses there.
Amazing guy. What a read. Folks, you're going to be captivated by the photographs and the illustrations. By the way, there are colorized floor plans for all of these houses.
Yes, we have floor plans, and we actually hired an architecture firm to do those in some cases.
So, everything is first class.
Yeah.
Minnesota's own.
And you might want to mention it was financed by the Jeffress Foundation out of Wisconsin, which also did the Wisconsin's own book. So their generosity is what made this book possible.
Absolutely. Larry Millette is the author, M-I-L-L-E-T-T. And then we're speaking of two T's. The photographer, Matt Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-T-T.
It's the double T book.
Double T book.
The four T book. Think of it as the four T book, yeah.
Let's go to Rochester, Larry Millette, next. Quarry Hill.
Quarry Hill, yeah.
You know, a guy who I would dare say was overshadowed by the name Mayo during his medical career, although he was one of the heroes, one of the founding
Dr. Henry
pillars
Plummer. And he, Dr. Plummer, is kind of the guy who, more perhaps even than the Mayo brothers, kind of invented the whole Mayo Clinic experience.
That's amazing.
He's the guy who developed a record-keeping system. He was, in addition to being a doctor, was a self-taught and apparently very capable engineer who designed, they had systems in the clinic for moving documents around on conveyor belts. He did all of that stuff in that 1928 Plummer building, which is named after him. Kind of the indispensable man of the clinic. And the great story about him, of course, is that he predicted his own death.
He was driving home, wasn't he?
And he was driving home from a meeting. He's in his 60s, and he realizes he's having a stroke. This is like the 1930s.
Self-diagnosis.
He gets home and tells his wife, I'm dying. Literally, I'm dying. Start gathering family and friends because I'm going to be dead within 24 hours. And he was.
And he was.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, cool in the sense of being you're pretty cool-headed. Like, okay, this is
pretty,
it.
It's pretty terminal,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
And his mansion, which you have...
Quarry Hill.
Yeah, Quarry Hill, was not on what came to be known as Pill Hill, but close to it?
Close to it, in that area.
Tell us about Pill Hill.
Well, Pill Hill is kind of the area of Rochester where all the doctors lived.
Hence Pill, okay.
Yeah, Pill Hill became known as, and a lot of beautiful houses up in that neighborhood, but his is one of the three great, I call them the three great mayors. Estates. The two brothers, Charlie and Will built Great Estates, one in Rochester, one just outside of Rochester, and then Quarry Hill, which is now owned by the city of Rochester, was Plumber's Estate.
Wow.
There was a lot of money in doctoring in those days.
Those days?
Yeah.
Well, some of it's gone away,
I can't speak
to
the present, but there was definitely a lot of money in it in those days.
Some doctors would long to be back in those days.
I think so.
Can you believe that we had British royalty here in the Twin Cities in Gem Lake in one of the houses featured in your book called Minnesota's Own?
Yep.
Was that Wally the former Wally Simpson?
Former Wally Simpson, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Paid a
visit.
They
were here?
They were in Gem Lake. They were going on a trip to the Duke's farm in Alberta. That's the story I've heard.
Yes.
And they stopped in St. Paul and had dinner at Worsted Skeens, which was the Daniels family sort of house out in Gem Lake.
Where's Gem Lake?
Gem Lake is just north and east of St. Paul,
okay.
Out towards White Bear Lake.
Yep.
And a little tiny community, and there were a bunch of very large estates out there at one time, including one by the Daniels family of Archer Daniels, Midland. Those Daniels also owned, for a while, one unit in the Goodkin House in St. Paul.
Really?
So you find all these connections. It's always interesting how you find these links among people. That's a beautiful Edwin Lundy house, who was the great period revival architect who did beautiful houses all the way up to the 1950s.
We'd be remiss if we didn't get to the LeDuc House in Hastings.
Oh, yeah.
This is an interesting man, an officer in the Civil War, and my goodness, here's another arc up, and then, he had trouble.
I mean, if you want to think of things on a difficulty scale, try building a house while you're 1,000 miles away at war. I mean, that's kind of like a built-in deal that's going to be hard. So, that was quite a project, but that's the beautiful Gothic revival house based on a design in a famous book called Cottage Residences by Andrew Jackson Downing that was sort of the book upon which a lot of Victorian architecture was eventually based. Mm-hmm. And this is only one of two houses, I believe, left in the country.
In the country?
That's actually built following the exact plan of one of those houses, except that Mary LeDuc supposedly drew the plan on a window because she wanted it reversed.
Wow.
So it's a reverse plan.
Financially, Colonel LeDuc, his reach...
he's one of those guys that you don't know how he was able to keep it all going, because he never had a lot of money. And then, of course, the great story about him is he came into a huge fortune when he was like 93 years old. And talk about cruel fate.
If he didn't have bad timing, he wouldn't have timing at all.
And that money came from the wife of a general who the wife felt had cheated LeDuc, and it's a general who wrote the song Taps.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all in your book.
It's all in the book.
It's all in the book. The book. What's the name of the book, Larry?
The book is called Minnesota's Own, Preserving Our Grand Homes.
And it is. It's a beautiful job. It really is. Let's see. Let's bounce back to St. Paul, the Leitner House, the William Leitner House. This gets us talking about the preeminent architect. Well, Clarence Johnson.
Yeah, Clarence Johnson. But Cass Gilbert.
Cass Gilbert is the guy who designed. Cass Gilbert did the Minnesota Capitol Building, designed that. The Woolworth Building in New York. The U.S. Supreme Court Building in Washington, among others.
And it's one of his 1890s houses from St. Paul, and it's a beautiful house that's kind of a mix of Richardsonian Romanesque and Beaux-Arts classic, and it kind of puts the two together in a very unusual way.
Summit Avenue,
318, I think, is the address, and it's one of a house that was subdivided into like 13 apartments for many years.
Ooh.
And
had to be ugly in there.
Dick and Nancy Nicholson of St. Paul ended up buying the house, who of course owned the house next to the James J. Hill House.
The Louis Hill House.
Mm-hmm. And they restored it. Now there's a new owner in there. It's back to a single-family house. It's gorgeous.
Oh, it is. It really is. Let's talk about Nancy and Richard Nicholson. They call it Dove Hill down there.
Dove Hill, they call it now, yep.
The Louis Hill House.
Yeah. The little house that Louis built next to James J's. And we'll be having an event there, as a matter of fact, for I think on the 4th of December for one of the groups. But they've done a lot for historic preservation in general, and certainly on Summit Avenue, they've been a force there.
The Nicholsons are great patrons around here. We're fortunate to have Dick and Nancy among us. We don't want to run out of time before we let people know where you, Larry Millett, are going to be appearing, talking about your book, maybe reading from it, signing it, certainly.
Well, we're going to do the book launch Wednesday, November 5th. At the American Swedish Institute in Minneapolis, and that'll be at 6:30. I'm going to be at Common Good Books in St. Paul on November 18th at 7. I'll be down in Winona at the Historical Society there on November 19th. Excelsior Bay Books, November 22nd at 1 p.m. Majors & Quinn, Minneapolis, November 25th. Minnesota History Bookstore, December 6th, and we'll be subtext in St. Paul on December 10th at 7, and here at the William Sondry Mansion in Stillwater, December 13th, 1 p.m.
Okay.
And Valley Bookseller will be handling the sales there at the Sondry Mansion, so that'll be a great event here in Stillwater, December 13th, 1 p.m.
Great. Let's hear it for Valley Bookseller, our fine sponsor here. Absolutely. In a fine, fine bookshop, as you know, Larry. Well, here we are, and we're talking about Stillwater. Let's talk about Minnesota's great Victorian city, Stillwater. You have a beautiful page devoted to this, and I love what you're writing.
Yeah, well, we spent a lot of time in Stillwater. We looked at a number of houses as possibilities in Stillwater, and obviously it's extremely rich. But I call it the Victorian city because what happened in Stillwater is you had this huge lumber boom, which ended pretty abruptly in the early 20th century, and the town actually decreased in size for a number of years and became kind of this sort of old town that time had passed by, in a sense, and so the houses are just kind of stood there. Nothing happened to them, and that allowed all of that historic architecture to survive through a number of things, and now you have, you know, along between St. Paul and Stillwater are certainly the two cities in Minnesota with the greatest amount of Victorian-era housing.
What I'm just curious, what mansions did you consider here in Stillwater that you didn't have room for? Didn't
make the cut? I'm trying to remember here. You're putting me on the spot.
Well, there are a lot of B&Bs, I suppose, some of those.
Yeah, you could, I tell people you could do 20 Stillwater houses. You could do a wonderful book on that.
Sure.
There's enough houses here. We looked at a number of them, and as I told you, there's all these different things we had to consider for, but we like the Sondry House, not only because of the house, but also the recreation hall, and we thought it was such a distinctive space that would be wonderful.
It was a good choice, no doubt about that. This book, Minnesota's Own, how does it rank to you among having put it together, worked so hard on it? One of your favorites, is it, among all the books you've written?
Yeah, it's certainly different. I've done a lot with lost architecture, so this one I'm doing with buildings that exist. It gave me a chance to get out, get around the state a little bit, see a lot of very nice houses that very nice people invited us in to spend some time and photograph.
With the notable exception of the one.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was interesting because there were houses that we really loved, but we, for example, decided we couldn't really photograph very well for one reason or another. Yeah, so we said, oh, we can't use that one.
Okay.
We'd like to, but it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So it was just a lot of fun to be able to see all these wonderful houses.
A few seconds left here. Tell us a bit more about your next book.
Well, I'm just finishing up a book on mid-century modern architecture in Minnesota, which is probably not everybody's favorite category, but we're going to talk a lot about the 50s.
And you put scandal in there and things like that. You have in this one.
Yeah, well, it's really more a book about how the Twin Cities, particularly, you know, what we think of as the Twin Cities today, the suburban world, that was a creation of that whole era. Hmm. And it happened for all sorts of different reasons. Talk a lot about the housing of the period, people like Orrin Thompson and the vast developments of the time. Mm-hmm. All of that kind of thing that we associate with suburbia today was basically the product of that era. And it happened for all sorts of complicated reasons, but also a lot of very beautiful housing, some wonderful churches from that period. But not your sort of Victorian goodies, I'm afraid.
Pete Seeger's song, Boxes, Little Boxes, made a ticky-tacky.
But I think people who are interested in architecture and modern design will find it very interesting.
The 1950s, not my favorite decade. Maybe you will change my mind.
I might.
Millett. Thank you so much. Larry, thank you for coming down. Congratulations to you and Matt Schmidt. A beautiful book indeed it is, folks.
Thank you.
Minnesota's Own. It's out there. It'll be in your bookshop shelves here shortly. How about a great holiday gift idea right there? Okay. Folks, thank you so much. I'm going to stick around here and be on Tom Osmond's show for a little bit here. Flashback Twin Cities. We're going to talk about the Twins in the good old days, the World Series days. And Tom and I will see you, that is Tom Shubidoo. We'll see you on Monday next with the All Request and Dedication program. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.